Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SMOOTH at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SMOOTH. Enjoy.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast Genesis Invitational Round 1 Instant Recap and looking ahead to Round 2. And to join me, I've brought in Mark Immelman, who's giving us a Michael Jordan flu game right now. Mark, welcome. Hope you're feeling well. I don't think you are.
I'm doing okay. I mean, I got to lie in bed the entire day with PGA Tour Live and then the Golf Channel on, and I was getting live tweeted by you from the golf course. So all's good. I had a day full of golf, albeit that I wasn't at the golf course. Thanks.
There you go. Technology allows us to keep track of everything that was going on. And yeah, speaking of which, I was at Riviera this morning for the first time. I was there, Mark. It was very romantic. It was pitch black at 6 o'clock this morning, only the lights of the scoreboard. And as the sun came up, Riviera is super impressive. What a course they have over there.
It's one of the best in the PGA Tour. I mean, everything about it, except for the drive in there down Sunset Boulevard, that's a bit of a traffic nightmare. But once you get on the grounds, the clubhouse, all the memorabilia and such in there, and then you look over this valley, and then the holes sort of go down into the valley and come back. And there's so many great holes, and it's always in great shape, and the field was stellar. And it must have been a great spot to be. I was envious of you, man.
There are so many great sight lines, and actually our guy Will Haskett on PGA Tour Radio, he actually made a comment that the defense at Riviera is the design, which I kind of like chewed on that for a second, and I was like, that's a great way to describe it, because there was not a breath of wind out there today, and Mark, there's still numbers lurking out there if you hit it in the wrong spot, which I think is a testament to a really well-designed golf course.
It certainly is, and I'll go along with what Will said there. He's obviously been around the block some and been to some great courses. All the greats, in my opinion, have undulation as defense, and Riviera certainly does. And you've got the influence of the sixth hole. That's the lowest part of the property, and everything flows in that direction towards the Pacific Ocean. The greens are small, and they play smaller because of all the undulation. The fairways have movement to them, so you've got to drive the ball into an area, not just into the fairway. And so you're right. There aren't many penalty areas on the golf course. I think I can think of one, like water has one penalty area off the top of my head, and then that barranca that runs through the property. But otherwise, it just slopes and slopes, and if you get on the wrong side of a slope, the ball tends to want to roll down a hill, and then it never ends in the best places ever. So it's a great spot, and the greens are fast, and there's just so many good holes about them. There's never a free shot around Riviera. You've got to have your wits about you the entire time.
Yeah, it was really something. So let's jump into this, because there are, as you mentioned, the field is absolutely stacked. There's a ton of guys here, and through 18 holes, a familiar name, you know, one of the bigger players on tour, Matt Kuchar, there's a household name for you, is leading the way, shooting 64 and three shots clear of the field. Now, he did it with the putter, Mark. He gained over 4 strokes putting every time they showed him. He was draining another 35-footer, it feels like. But this was one – I mean, Kuchar was – even in his post-round interview, was kind of laughing about all the putts that went in for him today.
But still, the thing about what he did was he putted in a place where, or he put his approach shots, I should say, in a place where he could putt aggressively. You know, not only all five-footers are the same around Riviera or certain courses like Augusta National or Pebble Beach or some of these venues. So he didn't – he hit the irons okay. He was 14 of 18 greens, but every time he was able to putt, he was able to putt aggressively, and that was the key to the round. Obviously put the ball in play off the tee, which is a must do around there. And from there, just constructed a very good round and was typically Matt Kuchar. And it was at a place in Riviera that welcomes that sort of an approach to the game.
Which is interesting because he's played here quite a bit, but hasn't had a ton of success. It's not like he's gone out and missed a bunch of cuts, but in his, I believe it's 13 career starts here at Riviera, he's got three top 20s, one top 10. This is, I believe, by far the best round he's ever posted here. So, I mean, it was all around a good day. We'll see if we can keep it going.
Well, truth of Matt Kuchar, he's been a bit of a renaissance man here over the last few years. He had that instance a couple of years ago when he missed the Tour Championship for the first time ever, I think in a long time. And he said he set himself the goal of not doing that again. And he comes out and he has a few victories early, wins at Mayakoba, wins at the Sony Open. And since then, he's coming in a year off a win out in the Far East. I believe it might have been Singapore. And so he's playing well and he's striking the ball well and he's doing Matt Kuchar things. And you know, when he gets to going, he can shoot some scores.
For sure. This is the first time he's led after the first round or co-led since the 2018 Mayakoba, which he closed out. So we will see if he can continue that and make it two in a row this week. The host, Tiger Woods, this was kind of a tale of two nines for Tiger, but let's start with the front nine. He goes out and immediately makes eagle on one, Mark, and he throws a dart on two, which is one of the harder holes on the golf course. And, I'm foaming at the mouth at this point.
Hey, well, hey, listen, before that even, did you see, I mean, this was typical, you know, golf always has this element of destiny to me. And if you really get beyond the Kyle Porter numbers, you know, there are all sorts of storylines that are hanging around in sort of the atmosphere. And that eagle putt that he made on the first came from 24 feet and 8 inches. Now they were tributing Kobe the entire week. And the first one he drains is from Kobe's two numbers, which I thought was pretty sweet.
Yeah. And to do that in LA is about as cool as it gets. And Tiger, I mean, really looked awesome through the first nine holes here. He goes out, he makes another birdie on five. He makes a birdie on eight. He makes the turn in 31. And, honestly, the sports books are dropping his number like crazy. They do not want to get burned on this. And then all of a sudden things get a little loose, Mark, on the back nine. He hits one fairway. He's got a case of the lefts. I mean, what happened? This really was a tale of two nines.
Well, what sort of happened was what we've talked about as we've set up this event. You've got to drive the ball in play. And on the front side, he was super with a driver. He hit the ball exactly where he was looking. His timing was there. The cadence of the swing was there. The poise, the balance, it was all on point. And then the backside, you get asked some serious questions going from number 12 on. 12 is just a mean par 4. 13 is equally as nasty. 14 is not an easy par 3. 15 is a beast. 18 is a beast, and you have to drive the ball well, especially on 12 and 13. And he was tripped up on 13, hooked one left. 12, he fanned one off to the right, but got a little fortunate. So he started to get that two-way miss going. And when you got that happening around Riviera, you are going to struggle. The good news, though, as you look at this, because I'd spoken with the HQ guys earlier in the week, and they said, well, make the case for Tiger winning. And I was like, he's got to putt these Poaneo greens well. And he did. All that left him a little bit was the driver over the final nine. Now, it was also a tough period coming in there because it gets cold quickly, as you know, over there when the sun goes down. So then all of a sudden it gets cold. The body gets a bit tight, especially if you're 40 years plus like me and Tiger. And so then the swing's not as fluid. And then a lot of folks are scrambling to try and get out of there because of the traffic. They want to get home in due time. And so it's kind of weird. It's like the end of the circus procession, you know, where you left there to just pick up the elephant poop and such. And that's what it felt like for those guys in the feature groups. It got all quiet. The fans left. It started getting dark. The holes were mean. So there was a little bit of that on the go for Woods too. But the good news is he got in with a round under par. I think he would have bought that if you sold it to him.
Yeah.
And he's got something to go and play with on some fresh greens tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I think that is exactly my takeaway. Is if you would have asked Tiger, hey, how does two under sound on round one here going out in the afternoon with whatever Poe might do to you? And I think you would have taken it. And I think that has to be the takeaway. And speaking of moving forward for Tiger, even just outside of this week, there's so many other storylines. There's 83 looming. There is kind of like this new schedule and WGC Mexico. Yeah. We don't know if he's going to play Mexico. He's got to decide by tomorrow, so I guess we're going to find out soon.
5 p.m. Eastern, we'll know. You know what? I'm Jack because I'm on the crew down in Mexico for PGA Tour Live. And last year, I was on the call there when he hit that freaking unreal fairway bunker shot on the ninth hole. He's 18th on I think it was the Saturday afternoon, where this thing curved 30 yards from no lie around a tree, hit the green, juke to the right. In their tights, I called it the shot of the tournament and the year, and the crowds went bananas. So I'm hoping he commits and goes back. It'd be cool.
Yeah, I've seen that replay about 1,000 times. So rooting for him to get back down there in Mexico for you. Now, he played with Justin Thomas today, who did not have it. I mean, I think that's putting it very nicely. Producer Jacob has dubbed this his most disappointing round of the day. And when producer Jacob says it, it must be true. Everything went wrong for JT today.
Well, you've heard of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and Jacob, right? The fifth. So Jacob says it's true. It was odd because he came out and he birdied the first, a hardworking birdie at that, but then two, he doesn't have a good tee shot, hits one way right up on the hill, makes double. And from then, you could just see he was sort of out of his comfort zone, which was odd because he played with Woods that much. But he just looked like he was trying to force the issue. He had the driver going in two directions. He battled back in the back nine, but it was still pedestrian at best. So, I mean, it was surprising. I expected Justin, at a course where he's played well, to come out here and play well. But I have a feeling there was a little bit of the Tiger Woods thing going on there to Justin Thomas, and I might take some Twitter heat for this, but I really do. It looked like he was really trying to force the issue a bit too much.
Yeah, this is honestly, it's a historically bad round for JT. He lost strokes in all four of the strokes gained categories, and I was rifling through my database on this to find any other time he would have done this, and it marks the fourth time in only 208 measured rounds. So, I mean, this is a rare thing for JT. I'm very interested to see how he bounces back from that, because a lot of times it's, hey, if one thing's going wrong, I can kind of jump over to the range, try to figure that out tonight or tomorrow morning. Everything went wrong for JT today. So I do kind of hope, to your point, Mark, maybe it's just something bigger. Maybe it's a little nerves. Everything went wrong and he just is right back to being JT tomorrow.
Well, let me hit you with some layman's golf statistics. Strokes get one thing. 6 of 14 fairways, you're playing defense. Yeah. 5 of 18 greens in regulation. Our buddies who play at the public muni on the weekend, they'd be disappointed with 5. So it was an odd sort of a performance. I'm prepared to call it an outlier and just toss it out. But he's going to have to do something special if he wants to see some weekend action this year.
He certainly is. Rory McIlroy, who was in the group that I followed for the most of the day, goes out and shoots a 3 under 68, 2 eagles, a birdie, 2 bogeys. I mean, Rory looked like he had everything under control. He always seems to do that. But what I want to ask you about, Mark, is I want to get your thoughts on his round, but specifically about the first hole, because I was there watching it. He starts on 10, which is that short drivable par 4, and he flies it on the green and he lands it in the back bunker, leaves it in the bunker, and then gets up and down for par, which to me was like, already on hole number one, he has kind of averted disaster. And I wanted to get your thoughts on how important it is to walk away with par on 10 and not have turned that into a really big number.
That was huge. I was watching that on PGA Tour Live and I thought exactly the same thing. Where that hole was cut today, anything in the middle, the back portion of the green, everything tilts away from the fairway and that back bunker tilts away from play. So anything in there runs up against the back lip. And the lip of the bunker you saw was a good 3, maybe 4 feet high in front.
Yeah.
And Rory had the thing close up against there, nearly pulled it off. But when he didn't, uh-huh. this could be disastrous, and gets out there, holds like a 6 or 7 footer for a par. And I think that was big. He made a bogey on 12, his third hole. But from then, he looked solid. He had some quality shots, made a few nice saves. But then the eagle on 17 and the eagle on 1, that kind of catapulted what was, in my opinion, a pretty average day for Rory into a really solid score.
Yeah, I think we're going to look back and look at those eagles, because if they're just birdies and this is 1 under, that's fine. But 3 under with 2 eagles, Rory solidified right there in the top 10. He's 4 shots back, but Kuchar's pretty clear on the rest of the field. I assume Rory's going to be making noise throughout the rest of the week.
He will, and what he did was what he did in Torrey Pines, and he spoke of it afterwards. You know, Rory to me was always the guy that the score that he signed for was probably the highest score he was going to shoot on the day, right?
Yeah.
In Torrey Pines, he battled out a top four with no game. He said so afterwards. He goes, I didn't hit it well. This was pure grind. He did it again today. And every great champion, every major champion, yes, I've said it, they will take their bad day and they will get out with something respectable. McIlroy did that today.
I think that's a great point. He signs a lot of cards that are the highest score he could have taken. Brooks Koepka, now the number 2 player in the world, Mark, starts his round on 10 as well. He makes bogey on 10 right out of the gate, and that's the only bogey he makes all day. He offsets it with 3 birdies to come in at 2 under 69. This to me was like the quietest 2 under 69 of the day. He was just hanging around, taking advantage of opportunities when they came to him, signs for a 69, and he lives to fight another day.
I'm looking through the again, we've talked about the value of playing well off the tee here, and I'm looking through the holes played. Fairway missed on 1 left, fairway missed on right, 2 right, 3 right, 4 missed left, 5, 7 right, 8 left, 9 right. That's just on the front 9. There we go. Right, 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 left, right, right, left.
That sounds like my that's my play-by-play you're looking at, Mark.
I wonder what the health of his knee is. I really do. I understand that there's some rust. This is his first start and such. But when you got a two-way miss going on, and he hits the thing predominantly from left to right, that is how it goes. And when you're pulling that fade, and then all of a sudden you're overfading the thing, it's hard to aim. And so thankfully, he was out early, so he would have had some time to go and work on this on the range and tighten it up for tomorrow, because at least he's got some speed regimens to kind of go back on. Because in practice and in play are 2 different things. So maybe they could go and iron out the issues there, knowing what he was feeling out there on the course. But that two-sided miss is a dangerous deal.
Yeah, it certainly is. Someone who often misses two ways, Phil Mickelson, although he hits bombs, Mark, ends up shooting a 72, 1 over par. He hit a long 333-yard drive. He had 100 people looking for his ball on number 3, and they still couldn't find it. I mean, that's a full day for Phil Mickelson.
I didn't see you in the TV gallery looking for his golf ball over there.
No, I didn't have a bet on him this week, so I was the one just standing on his ball saying, no, I don't know where it's at. I'm not sure. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, typically Phil, 4 birdies, 2 doubles, 1 bogey. It was either sheer brilliance or sheer catastrophe. It was typically Phil, and that's why we love him. There was enough good, because he had to get by the caddy issue today. He had Andrew Getz and his coach on the bag. And I don't care who you are. That's a change in rhythm. That's a change in pace. He had to do some of his own yardages. So that gets you sort of off your kilter some. So I'm sure he'll be okay tomorrow, because to me, even despite the 2 double bogeys, there was enough good there for Phil to get out and shoot something under par tomorrow and get himself into the weekend.
I'm glad you touched on the caddy thing, because I wanted to ask you about that and find out how big of a deal it is. By the way that you kind of described that, it is a big deal to have a new caddy on your bag.
Well, here's how it goes. You know, if you're playing well, it's not a big deal. If you're playing badly, it's a big deal. It's one of those sorts of things, because if you're playing badly, you're grinding, the timing's off, there's bunker raking, there's all this other sort of stuff, you know, there's looking for golf balls, there's changing golf balls, and that's where the guy who gets you, the guy who knows your time, the guy who knows your mannerisms out there in between the ropes, they're going to get you, all right? But if I'm first time on the bag and Phil's all over the joint and I've got to wreck bunkers and the clean golf balls and stuff, it's hard. So I feel for Andrew Sim. He knows him well, but in between the ropes is a different deal to on the driving range. So it's a thing, and I'm prepared to ascribe some of that to just Phil being a little out of rhythm, I think.
Okay. I got a great look at new Bryson today, Mark, and I can confirm he is jacked.
You know what? You get those cut jacked guys, you know, those guys that look like Adonis, and then you get the Thor looking dudes. And Bryson, look, I mean, he is massive. The dude is just imposing.
Yeah, quite so. And, something was working out there. Maybe it's the new body. He gained 4.1 strokes tee to green. He finishes, 3 under 68. Impressive stuff. But what I did want to talk to you about, Mark, because ever since he's been going through this kind of body transformation, whatever you want to call it, his results have kind of been all over the place. He's had some good. He's had some really bad, everything in between. And I kind of wanted to just chat through, like, to me, a body change is essentially a swing change because you're learning new distances. You're learning. Maybe you're not as flexible. Like, it feels like it could take Bryson a long time to iron out whatever new Bryson is.
Your take there, Rick, is spot on. You know, I've worked with a number of players who are out of shape, let's call it, you know, a little down. They lose some weight and it just changes your timing. It changes the pace at which your body moves. The club will even feel different in your hands because if you lose weight, your fingers feel thinner. If you gain weight, your fingers feel a little fatter, and that's where all the feel is. In fact, at Hogan's Alley here this week in Riviera, Ben Hogan used to drink ginger ale before the rounds of golf to make his fingers feel more thin just to help him garner some more feel. So yeah, this is a thing, and he's gained this immense speed and power off the tee, and it's something to behold. But by that token, then you've also got to be able to throw the off-speed pitch. And whereas he's driving the thing just gargantuan distances, he's not capitalizing with a wedge play because he's not hitting them in there tight enough. So today was a real uptick in form around a tough golf course. It was playing hard too. So maybe this is Bryson sort of getting all of his variables that he talks about in a row now.
What I completely lost my train of thought on Bryson here. Oh, what I was going to say is, especially for someone like Bryson who is going through these, like, Bryson is so exact and he thinks of everything to go through something like I feel like any grain of sand throws off the whole motherboard for Bryson, and he's got to recalculate everything. I can't even imagine what he's going through with this whole new body thing.
Well, absolutely, because the data that they go through I'm partners with the guys at FlightScope, and he works alongside them. I mean, the data that they're looking for and the stuff they're measuring when they're setting themselves up for tournaments and how the ball's flying and all the stuff, relative humidity, you name it. I mean, it's stuff that's above my head. Then to add in there, well, dang, my body moves differently, feels differently, and I've got this hemi underneath the hood now, which I never used to have.
Yeah.
You know, the first time I drove a fast car, you put your foot down, you, it sort of pulls away and you lose control of the thing. The golfers have some of that going on, you know?
I love it. All right. I want to look ahead to round two, but before we do that, let's take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsors.
The sports calendar is heating up and FanDuel is making it even more exciting to be a part of that action. It's definitely multi-screen season with golf in full swing, of course, but we've got playoff hockey and playoff basketball along with the start of Major League Baseball season just to pique your interest. Basically 24 hours throughout the day, and right now FanDuel is giving new customers $200 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's $200 that you can use to bet on the tourney, Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, so much more. I use mine on golf, of course, but the way to get involved, visit FanDuel.com/first and make your first bet a big win. Again, Visit FanDuel.com/first and make your first bet a big win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You're ready, Bob.
All right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig? What's coming?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, we're back. Mark, ton of great names here, a ton of storylines. I'm looking towards obviously Tigers round tomorrow, getting out early. I mean, the Poa Greens in the morning should be running very pure. I'm excited to see if he can forget whatever he did on the back nine, missing all of those fairways, and get right back at it. What are you most looking forward to tomorrow?
Well, I think the guys that got out this afternoon, I haven't seen the forecast for tomorrow. I'm expecting it's going to be more of the same. But typically around a major championship-style course like Riviera, if you open up in the afternoon and you play well, you are in the pound seat. You've sort of got the inside track because you come out the following morning, green's a bit more receptive. You can put something on the board because there is no doubt that the golf course did play a little more stout this afternoon than it did in the morning. The ball was sort of bouncing a bit more. This morning they were skidding some on the greens, but the ball was still stopping pretty well. So for me, it's the afternoon guys that made decent scores, Woods and company, to see how they go and play tomorrow morning. But then, you know, we've talked about it. I've said it. Rory's the highest ranked dude coming in here. He's the favorite. He looked like the favorite today.
Yeah.
Shoot the lowest score, but it looked like it was so easy. And so I'm just keen to see how he gets by tomorrow afternoon, because right now he looks like Secretariat, just kind of cruising off the lead right now. And he's just waiting for the final turn to hit the gas.
That's right. Yeah. He's in second gear. He's got a lot left to give. I'm kind of interested to see. Well, first of all, we've got a couple of big names that are hovering around what the cut line is going to be. I mean, Justin Thomas is in a tie for 99th. DJ's on the outside looking in at the moment. Bubba's on the outside looking in. I'm interested to see which one of those guys end up making the cut, playing the weekend, or slamming the trunk and heading home. But also, you mentioned, you know, Rory signing for the worst score he could have. I feel like Justin Rose kind of did the same thing today, where he shot 2 under, 69, great, but he hit the stick, his second on the par five late in the round, missed the eagle putt from like 12 feet. He stuffed one on a par three a few holes earlier, almost went in, it rolls out to 5 feet. He misses that putt. Like, this could have very easily been 4 or 5 under par for Justin Rose. And I'm wondering if he can kind of keep that going tomorrow.
That's a good call there. He's played one event in the PGA Tour in 2020, and there was a miscut down in Torrey, and he looked sharp for someone who was lightly run today. So yeah, he's got that major championship sort of a demeanor. The major championship kind of game where par is a good score. And we saw this afternoon how par around Riviera on that back nine, holes 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. You know, if you make pars over there, they're golden. So, and he's got that sort of a mindset about him, where McIlroy, on the other hand, can get a bit hemmed in. He can get a bit frustrated with a bit between the teeth. So Rose, I think, is also in good shape. I'm just keen to see how, you know, after a day around there, walking for the first time under pressure, you know, it takes its toll on the body. So I'm keen to see how he does tomorrow.
I love it. All right, that'll do it. Mark, any parting words before we head out of here?
Dude, I'm glad you give me this opportunity.
I got to give you a platform.
Because our producer Jake is looking on. Now, you and I were at the bottom of our one and done league. You know, in the cellar over there.
Yes, I'm very aware.
So what I've done on my leaderboard is I've favorited who our league has picked this week. Right now, there's only two guys that are making the cut. That would be you and me with Patrick Cantlay. The rest of these fools are missing, so I hope it stays the same way. I like Jacob.
I love it. We can make up a lot of ground on these jabronis this weekend if only Cantlay is the one that can get through. All right, Mark, much appreciated. Hope you feel better. You can get Mark on Twitter. It's at @Mark_Immelman. We're going to be back tomorrow, myself and Greg Ducharme, recapping round two of the Genesis Invitational. I'm Rick Gaiman. Hit me on Twitter at @RickRunGood, and we'll see you next time.
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.